Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Krishna Hare 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 Krishna Hare Rama Hare Rama Rama Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Om Shri Ganeshaya Namaha Om Shri Saraswatyaya Namaha Om Samasta Jana Kalyane Niratam Karunamayam Namami Chinmayam Devam Sadgurum Brahma Vidvaram I'll chant these verses again. You can try to repeat them. Kataksha kirana chanta Naman mohabdhaye namaha Anantananda krishnaya Jagan mangala murtaye Ahamasmi sadabhami kadachinnahamapriyaha brahmaivahamata siddham sachidananda lakshanam mayyevodeti chidvyomni Jagadgandharvapattanam Atoham nakatham brahma Sarvagnyam sarvakaranam Nasvata pratyavijnanat Niram shatvanna chanyataha Nachashraya न चाश्रय विनाशान् मे विनाशस्यादनाश्रयः श्रयात् न शोषप्लोषविक्लेद छेदाश्चिन्नभसो मम सत्यैरप्यनिलाग्न्यम्भः शस्त्रैकिमुत कल्पितैः. Okay, this is where we reach. So, what is going on in text, just again to recap briefly, is the Upanishads speak about, you know, Vedanta is Upanishad. Vedanta, Upanishad mean one and same. The Upanishads speak about the nature of the absolute reality as being, you know, unchanging, eternal, all-pervasive, you know, like that, in so many different terms. And a student who hears that, and not only that, that I am that reality, a student who hears this will have many doubts, many questions in his mind. And so the text is again and again going over many of the terms which are there in the Upanishads. And it is trying to clarify. Now, that is a process. Nobody goes to a university in one day and gets everything clear, isn't it? Not only that, even after 5 years, then nothing is clear. That also is. What a wonderful world we live in. So, this is a process. When the Upanishad says something, we hear it, so we know it. The Upanishad, I am Brahman. Okay, take care, I know. I know it. I am Brahman. Who told? Upanishad. But to understand that thing, and then to feel that thing, I told, you know, there is a whole process. So in understanding it, this text is a very small text of 28 verses also. And then is a short time of 3 days we are doing. So nobody should expect that in that short text of 28 verses and in 3 days, we get it. Good you don't get it because there will be no more camps. But if you get it also, dhanyosi, you are blessed. So, you're taking many aspects, many words, terminologies, ideas, you know, all of those which are put forth in the Upanishad, and we are going over them. And it's, I always feel that those things which take a long time to build, they last longer. And those which come off very fast, they fall also very fast. Yeah. So it is better that we take our time and you study the ideas. Even though it may be one idea, study it well, get it riveted in the mind, and you know, you move on like that. It is okay. I was just telling somebody, you know, see, we have all the time in the world. No, 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 I will die just now. Don't worry, you'll come back only. Wait. Where you'll go? Huh? Bhagavan says in 6th chapter of Gita that we'll be born and we just continue from where we. Yeah, we'll just keep on going, no problem. So time is endless. We don't die. Bhagavan doesn't go anywhere. Knowledge doesn't go. Knowledge is coexistent with the universe. So what is the big worry? Don't get stressed. We are not going anywhere. Bhagavan is not going anywhere. Shastra is not going anywhere. Nothing. Everything will be there. So go. Very comfortable. Not only the mark of this gati or the goal, lakshya, that goal is sukha. The marga should also be sukha. Otherwise, you're so stressed. A sadhaka should not look stressed. What he's doing is stress sadhana or what? Just take it easy and lightly. All right. So now, in verse number 6, which we are supposed to see today, it ends with Aham Sarvagaha. It is trying to show that I am all-pervasive. Because remember, the reality is all-pervasive, and I am one with the reality. So therefore, that means I am all-pervasive. So that is what it's trying to show now. How, in a very peculiar way, it tells how I am all-pervasive. See, before I tell you that, let me tell you. Pervasiveness can be of three types. All-pervasive in terms of time. In Sanskrit, it's called nitya. Means I am there in all periods of time. All-pervasive in terms of space. That they call as vibhum. So I am present in all space. All time and all space. All-pervasive. Called vibhum. And all-pervasive in terms of vastu. Desha kala vastu. Space, time and object. So I am all-pervasive in time in terms of objects. Means I am there in every object. That in Sanskrit is called as sarvagataha. So I am nitya vibhum sarvagataha. From Upanishad directly it will come. Several places. Nitya, eternal in terms of time. Vibhum, all-pervasive in terms of space. And sarvagataha. I am immanent in all objects, in all things. That's vastu, deshakala vastu. So this one is now trying to prove the last, what sarvagataha. Sarvagataha means I am in all things. So how am I in all things? That is what this verse will tell. No? So it's just explaining something of Upanishad only. It's, I am sarvagataha. Sarvagataha means I have gone everywhere, literally. Gone everywhere. You know? See, what a wonderful thing. You just study this one word. I am sarvagataha. See, now people have on their bucket list, you know. I have to go to Rome. I have to go to South Africa. I have to go to Argentina. I have to go to Iceland, Greenland, Poland, or whatever. Oh, no. All sorts of land. People have bucket list to go everywhere. This is the Upanishad telling what? You are sarvagataha. You have already gone everywhere. Airline companies will not like this, you know. Because if you have already gone everywhere, you will not buy any tickets. So now, how am I sarvagataha? And here, it's shortened form of sarvagataha is sarvagaha. Now see that verse. Abharupasya vishvasya bhanam bhasannither vina kadachinnavakalpeta bhachaham tena sarvagaha. Okay, now you have to follow this logic. See, when it is presented like that in Sanskrit, Sanskrit language is not like English. Yeah? Well, I suppose Sanskrit language is closer to Trini language, you know, where I come from in Trinidad. We leave out many words from that sentence. Words that are not required. Like it was, where are you going? In English. R is the verb. Where are you going? R and going also, both. Where are you going? In Trinidad, where are you going? Where are you going? The R is gone? Gone. Sanskrit is very much like that, actually. Many words are left out also. Sentences in Sanskrit can be totally complete with no verb. There are many sentences with no verb. The verb is presumed. Then there is no need to put that verb. So now, when they present, when the Rishi presents like this, there will be many ideas which are missing. So we have to fill in those ideas. Now see, first thing. Avarupasya vishvasya. That is Vishwa. Vishwa means this Jagat which we see in front of us, right? The whole world which we see in front of us. Abharupa. Abharupa means it is inert. This thing is inert. What it means? It doesn't know itself. Inert means dead thing. It is a dead thing. It doesn't know itself. Thank God, I told you yesterday, it doesn't know itself. But look, I know it or not. So I am not inert. I know it. I am not dead. I am a conscious entity. So then now there are two things only, right? There is the conscious entity and there is the inert entity, right? So this is Jagat is called, or the Vishwa is called as Abharupa. Abharupa means it is inert. Abha, it doesn't shine or it is not conscious all by itself. But then there is me, the one who is conscious. I know it. So these are the two entities. He says, what he means to say, if you really do a little bit of analysis, you will see that there are no two entities. There is only one entity. Because without me, the conscious entity, there is absolutely no knowledge, absolutely no knowledge of that inert entity. So in other words, if the world had only contained inert entities with no conscious entity, that is tantamount to saying that there is nothing. Because who will know? If there is nobody to know, if there is no conscious entity, that is tantamount to saying that there is no inert entity also. That is why he says here, bhasan nidhe vina, without the proximity of some conscious entity, that other entity, the inert entity, will not be known. Kadachin na avakalpeta. Never we can say that there is some inert entity. There has to be some conscious entity saying that. And if no conscious entity was present, there will be no inert entity also. This is something you have to give a lot of thought to. You can't just take it and face value. You have to reflect on that. In other words, my presence is the very substratum for everything which I experience. If I were not there, there is no conscious entity, nothing will be experienced, which is the same as saying nothing is there. And I'm telling, each person has to say this for himself. Look here. I cannot be sure about your existence. Just like when we see the water on the highway, or when we see a snake on a rope. Seeing it is no proof that it is there. Correct or not? Seeing the water on the highway is not proof that the water is there. In other words, you can very well see something which is not there. So seeing a thing is no proof that it is there, right? But look, seeing a thing outside, which may be there or which may not be there, which cannot be conclusively arrived at, it means there or not. But the one who sees, his existence is guaranteed because seeing is going on. But in the same way, I'm telling you that I cannot be sure of your existence, but I am 100% sure of my existence. Because if I am doubting whether you exist or not, that doubting is proof that somebody is there to doubt. Somebody is doubting, isn't it? So now each person has to say that for himself. And that one who is experiencing the doubt, that one is called as the conscious entity. And if he is not there, I told, nothing else is there. that conscious entity then becomes the substratum for all things which are experienced. Now, we experience a big infinite universe. No matter how far we go, we can go that far again. There's an infinite universe around me. And then I am the support for that whole thing. I cannot conclusively say anything about you, but I can say about myself. I am aware of you. Whether you are aware of me, I don't know. Only you will know, isn't it? But I am aware of you. So, all the things which we see in the world, their existence and their presence depends first on my presence. This will become clearer as we go in more verses. Again, it will come. Depends on my presence only. And so, because, see, simple logic. If I say, whatever I experience in this world, all around me, all depends on me. I am the substratum for it. If I were not there, it is as good as saying nothing else is there. If I say that simple thing, that means to say that I am sarva gataha. I have gone into everything because without me, that thing will not be there. This is the logic which is going. Now, that idea is not going to be left. That idea is going to be picked up again. Now see that? Number 7. Nahi bhana drite sattvam. Narte bhanam chito chitaha. Chit sambandho pi na dhyasat. Rite tena hamadvayaha. Not only am I the one that is responsible for the whole existence, because the whole existence is in my consciousness, you know, in my mind. I am the one responsible for the whole existence, but I am at the same time advayaha. I am one without a second. People say, but that is a big ego. You think you are alone are there? It is not like that. It is, if you want to say that there is not one, there are many of us, we say, no, all of us are only one. You are included, I am included, and everything else is included. This sarva, this advaya principle, which is there in the Upanishad, advayaha, one without a second, is very easy to prove. Even science has proved this thing now. Because science reduces this whole universe to energy or not. Everything is energy in motion. Energy. Even the space, full of energy. So now science itself has reduced the whole universe to just one thing. So we just, from energy, we just go one step further. It is not energy, it is existence. And we saw yesterday, the same existence is also consciousness. And the same consciousness is also ananda. So we have just gone one step beyond science. Instead of calling it energy, we call it existence. The building block of the universe is existence. Now, the idea which was just there, and that is that I am the substratum for the whole world. See, that idea is elaborated a little bit more now. It says, bhanatrite nahi sattvam. Meaning to say, we cannot say that the world exists without experiencing the world. Huh? First, I have to experience something. I have an experience of this. Then I say, based on that experience, it exists. Right? This is step by step now. I experience it. Therefore, it exists. Oho. Now, second step. First step. Without experiencing, we cannot conclude that it exists. Second step. Chitaharite
nahi
achit bhanam. That means to say, the experiences of the external world is not possible without a conscious experiencer. So step one is, without experiencing it, I cannot conclude that it exists. I first have to experience it. You know, in that first step also question will come. See, for example, now all of you have left your homes and you have come here. So you are not experiencing your home. You know? So then we say, oh, I'm not experiencing my home. Then how do I know that it exists? Maybe my home doesn't exist. No. Because nobody is experiencing it. According to the first statement, existence is dependent on experience. So I'm not experiencing my house. I'm not seeing it, tasting it, touching it, feeling it, nothing. That means my house is not there. So don't worry, your house is there. First thing, Ishwara is experiencing it. So the experience doesn't have to be only yours. It doesn't say whose experience. It just says experience. So it is in the mind of Ishwara. But one wonderful thing, Ishwara and I, we are one and same. There is the Tattvamasi Mahavakya is there, no? Tattvamasi, thou art that. So it is experienced. The house is experienced. Therefore it is there. So now, the second step will be, you know, after you clarify all questions of that first step, existence of something is dependent on its experience. If that thing is not experienced by no one, by anybody, not experienced by anybody, that means that thing is not existent. Second thing, for that experience to take place, a conscious entity is required. An experience cannot be had by an inert entity. This cannot experience this. This microphone cannot experience this microphone. If they did, then we would not have been required. They will do their own business, isn't it? He'll conduct his business with them. They'll carry on their own world. One inert entity cannot experience another inert entity. That is a contradiction in terms. Then how did you call it inert then? An inert entity cannot experience another inert entity. It requires a conscious entity to experience an inert entity. So now, the world is reckoned to exist only because it is experienced. And experience is not possible without a conscious entity. That is the second step. Now, third step. Very wonderful. This is nice Vedanta, you know. It says, Chit sambandha api na adhyasat rite. What is the meaning of that? It means you cannot have a relationship of a conscious entity and an inert entity had it not been for adhyasa, superimposition. Now let us go over that again a little bit. You know, there are things which are mutually contradictory in the world. Like light and darkness. You cannot have light and darkness at one and the same time, isn't it? Either you have light or you have darkness. I mean, in the same place. You have a little candle in the dark, right? That flame is there. So at least where that flame will be there, it will be bright. You can't have darkness there and light there at one and the same time. They are mutually exclusive things. Contradictory things. They cannot be there. So now, what is telling here? One entity is conscious and one entity is inert. Totally unconscious, right? These two things can only be related if there is adhyasa, means superimposition. You cannot have a real relationship between the two of them. Meaning to say, on a conscious entity which is called as Ishvara or the absolute reality or Brahman or whatever you call, you cannot have an inert universe unless that inert universe is just superimposed. You cannot have a jada or an unconscious inert universe on a conscious entity which is all-pervasive. Go over that thing again. If absolute reality, Brahman or God or whatever you want to call, if that is of the nature of pure consciousness, how can you have inert things in pure consciousness? The moment it comes in contact with pure consciousness, it will also become conscious, isn't it? So how it is, on this Brahman we have an inert universe. He said that can only happen if it is a superimposition. Just like when a movie is superimposed on a screen. Now screen is there still. But movie is called movie because it is moving. So the only way that can happen is one is superimposed on the other. I mean, and a superimposition is not a real thing. Like yesterday how I told you in detail, name and form, they are superimpositions. They are not real things. So you can only have an inert universe on Brahman if it is a superimposition. You cannot have it in a real way. You can have a superimposed universe of names and forms. That means to say what? There is only one Brahman. And if you see a universe, it is only superimposition of names and forms. That is the conclusion. The universe in front of us is only superimposed. And there is only one Advaya Brahman. Undifferentiated, non-dual, single conscious entity. And from that standpoint, we cannot even say conscious entity. There is only consciousness. There is only consciousness. And so it is Advaya. This is the steps in thinking. The thing which is experienced outside can only be experienced if there is, or known to exist if there is an experiencer. And the experiencer cannot be inert. He has to be conscious. And the whole universe, I'm conscious of it. And then, this whole universe which is inert, and I am the conscious one. How come there's a relationship between the two? That can only happen if one is superimposed on the other. It cannot really be there in the other. A superimposed thing is something which is not really there. It is just appearing there. This also comes back to what we were talking about before. What is that? Gandharva Pattanam. We saw that word before, no? This universe is like castles in the sky. Like that. So here also, that idea is coming. How two contrary things can exist together? Only if one is superimposed on the other. And a superimposition is not a real thing. So when you remove the superimposition, it is called apavada. Negate the superimposition. When we negate that superimposition, what is left? You see, even though you see a snake on a rope, that doesn't mean to say that there are two things. I was just telling you, seeing is not any proof of being, isn't it? If you see a snake on a rope, that does not prove that there is a... Seeing actually has its limits. You see, you can only conclude certain things. You cannot conclude what we usually conclude. How big is the moon? So by seeing, you can't conclude anything correctly, isn't it? Or the sun even. That big. Two fellas were walking there. And in evening time when that sun is setting, it looks like the moon. So you don't know whether it's sun or moon. So they were arguing. One was saying it is sun. Other was saying it is moon. Sun, I tell you. Moon, I tell you. They were arguing with each other. So another man was passing. So they asked him, hey, is this the sun or the moon? He said, I don't know. I'm not from around here. Krishna from this place. I will know. But with eyes, you can't really conclude much, isn't it? Even simple thing like sun or moon, you can't even know. And size and all of that sort of thing. So, eyes have their limit. So, the presence of a rope on a snake doesn't really prove, a snake on a rope doesn't really prove that there is a snake. In the same way, the presence of this whole inert universe on the reality doesn't prove that there is a universe. What we can conclude is two contrary things cannot coexist. So one has to be only a superimposition on the other. It cannot really be there in the other. It is a superimposition. That is the point of the verse. Now, from the next verse, the most wonderful method is given to disidentify with the inert universe. Just know there's an inert universe, not his body, inert or not. The whole from the antakarana coming down, everything is inert only. But we identify with it. In fact, we identify with this body so strongly. It's called Dehatma Buddhi. The identification with this body is called Dehatma Buddhi. We all feel we are the body only. So now this method is given to remove this identification. I am not this body. It's amazing how deeply this Dehatma Buddhi is embedded. It's a very, very amazing thing. We only think, the moment, what is your height? I'm 5 feet five. 5 feet ten. 6 feet two. So that, what is my height? It means, what is the height of my body? Isn't it? But we don't speak that language. We don't say, what is the height of my body? We say, what is my height? That means I have identified with the body. And like that, everything in life, you will see. We have identified with the body so strongly. What is my weight? What is my height? Very nicely. What is my nationality? The Atman has nationality or what? Atman has no nationality, isn't it? But we go on telling all of these things. And then they rivet it from child. Children are born very innocent and with full knowledge, you know. Society's duty is to take away all that. Take away. Children have no such identity. I'm black, Chinese, white, Indian, brown, this, that, nothing. They don't have. But society robs them of this fundamental knowledge which they have. So, in other words, that child, I am. No more questions after that for that child. I am. Aham asmi. That is Upanishadic gyan they have. So, Dehatma Buddhi has to be erased. And what has to be put in there? Sarvatma Buddhi. Dehatma Buddhi has to be replaced with Sarvatma Buddhi. That I am everything. I am one with the whole universe. So now, that is what is being given. Here, method is given also. You'll see number 8. Na deho nendriyam chaham. Na prano namano nathihi. Mamata parirabdhatvat. Akridat. Svadidam thiyaha. He says, na dehaha, aham na dehaha, na indriyam, na pranaha, na manaha, na thiyaha, dihi. I am not this body, I am not this mind, I am not the prana, I am not intellect, any of this, not the senses, indriya. How? Based on what? Very simple thing. Mamata. Mamata means they belong to me. Madhyatve nagnyatam atma nabhavati in tattva bodhi says. What is the meaning of that? He says, look, very simply, all of us understand, no? When I say my glasses, we understand very clearly, I am not the glasses, isn't it? When I say my house, I understand, I am not the house. My car, I am not the car. So those external objects, we understand very clearly, I am not that thing. But we use the same language, my hand, my head, my body, my mind, my intellect. Is the same language is used or not? But when it comes to this apparatus, a little mix-up takes place. Even though exact same language is being used. So Bhagavan Shankaracharya in Tattva Bodh, he says, Madiyatvena jnatam atma na bhavati. Since it is considered to be mine, it cannot be me. Mine means something which is owned by me, isn't it? So since it is mine, it cannot be me. That is a very simple logic. I know very clearly my house is not me. My car is not me. My dog is not me. My donkey is not me. Even though my wife may call me like that only. But no. My donkey is not me. So those things are easy. But this body, mind, intellect, all of it, my habits, my traits, my characteristics, my likes, my dislikes, we go on using the same language. It belongs to me. It cannot be me. Mamata. Because it is mine. That is the logic which is given in the second book. Mamata parirabdhatvat akaridatvat idam. Second reason is given. Why it is not me? Because it is called as idam. Now see, what is idam? See, there can be only two thoughts possible for all things which we know. One is, we know ourselves and we know this world, right? And those two things can be categorized into two thoughts only. What is aham vritti and idam vritti? There are two vritti, two thoughts. One of the thought is I. The other thought is this. Now you tell any other thought. Even when I think about God, it is this. Because I am objectifying God, isn't it? Only two thoughts are possible. Aham and idam, this. Me, myself, and this. Everything in the whole universe will fall into this. Idam. Akridatvatidam. Dhyaha. All the things. Now, that includes body, mind, intellect. It is this. This body, this mind, this intellect, these thoughts, these indriyas, like that. This. So if there is a this, there has to be an aham, an I who is saying this, isn't it? That means I am different from all of them. There is I who says this mind, this intellect, this. People tell all the time, no? Just they don't think. Swamiji, they come and they tell me, Swamiji, this mind is troublesome. This mind will not leave me. His mind is so stressed. We hear all of these words all of the time. So no, if you are saying this mind, that means it is not me. It is this mind, isn't it? So what we have to do more and more, retreat inside and just see the mind as this mind. It really is this mind. We talk it, but we don't experience it. We say this mind. So what the line is telling, this is the way to disidentify. What has happened is I have mixed myself up too much with all. Let us categorize this again in or the Upanishadic language. What is it? It is called as the Upadhi. Body, mind, senses, intellect, all of it is called as Upadhi, technical language. Means conditioning. I am mixed up with the Upadhi. I'm mixed up with all of these Upadhi, conditioning. And I have taken myself to be that. When in fact, you know, Guruji's notes has, I told you it comes from Swayam Prakash Yati. Gives example, but Guruji gives a modern example. Was it like that electricity, which is all pervasive from Australia to Russia to everywhere, electricity is one and same. But electricity comes and goes into that bulb and it makes that bulb glow. And then he forgets that he is the same electricity in Australia. I am now in this bulb. I am called electricity. I am here manifesting as a bulb. And he forgets his connection with all things. So the same way, Atma Chaitanya is mixed up with this Upadhi, body, mind, and intellect. And Atma Chaitanya forgot now. He's connected to all things in this universe. He thinks, I am this body. Yeah, 5 feet, 500 pounds. Indian background. American citizen. A, B, C, D. Whatever. No. Something. He gets caught up with this. Forgets his oneness and all pervasiveness and all that. And because he's caught up with this limited Upadhi, whatever conditions the Upadhi is going through, he's also going through the same. Like a, he has become like a buggy in a train. Wherever the engine goes, the buggy has to go. So now wherever, whatever this body suffers, he has to also suffer. So body is paining. Then he goes, I am paining. Are you nitya is ananda? How you will pain? Nitya is ananda only. And then he goes, I am paining. Oh, Swamiji. Do something, you touch me. Like that, you see? So, disidentifying with the Upadhi, becoming more and more sakshi, a witness of that Upadhi. I am not this Upadhi. Just by sheer use of language, it is proven, I am not this Upadhi. By the sheer use of the language only. It is my head, my back, my body, my mind, my thoughts, my likes, my dislikes. It is mine, and so not me. You have to become that one sakshi, which is spoken about now in number 9. I am sakshi, the witness, the all-pervading and there, and not this ego and all the antakarana and all the upadhi which we just saw. I am none of them. See, that is number 9. Sakshi samanvita prayan. Sakshi sarvanvita prayan. Aham naham kadachana. Parinama paricheda. Paritape rupa plavat. See, I am Sakshi. Aham, where is there in the first line? Aham Sakshi. Aham sarvandita. Aham prayan. This aham goes with all three of them. Means I am the witness of what? All the things that are going on in this body, mind, intellect. I am the sakshi, witness. Sarvanvita, I am all-pervading. And prayan, I am there. We saw these already. I am there. Just now we saw sarvagaha. Sarvagaha means, and sarva, sarvanvita is one and same. And then I am prayan. Dare. Everybody's dare to himself. Yeah. I tell you, even a small child who doesn't understand anything, he's also dare to him. And the smaller he is, the more dare he is to himself. Like a baby, right? Baby doesn't care where the mother or the father has to get milk and food for him. Isn't it? You die if you have to die, but get milk for me. Isn't it? Later on, he may start thinking, no, 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 I don't want you to work so hard. You know, I feel sorry for you. I will go and get that food for my later on. But in the baby, he only cares about him. And so he's dearest to himself only. He doesn't care if the mother or father gets no sleep all night. He only cares about himself only. Like that. Dear to himself. So, we are all dear to ourselves like that. Later on, we learn, you know, what they call selflessness and our oneness with the universe. And so everything becomes dear. That is what we are supposed to learn. Otherwise, we, by ourselves, we are Sakshi, all pervasive, means witness, we are all pervasive and we are dear to ourselves. And na aham kadachana parinam parinam paricheda paritapehi upaplavat means to say, and I am no time, I am the witness, and I am no time in any way associated with all the changes which are going on in the world, all modifications and changes, all limitations and afflictions, brokenness. Now, what is the meaning of that? These all changes which we don't like, all change things which we don't like, but naturally because we are unchanging. We are unchangeable, so we don't like change. And the world is also, this world is a nice play field, you know, it plays with us. Not that we play with the world plays with us. How? See, look here. In the world, all things are changing, right? Parinam is going on. How does the world play? We think that we play with the world, really the world plays with us. All things are changing. Okay, take care. That is the nature of the world. Second thing. Oh, things which we want to change fast doesn't change. It changes at its own pace. And things which we do not want to change, is it correct or not? See, nobody wants to change from black to gray. We don't want it to change. But overnight, then things which we want to change. You know, since I married this husband, he's been the same. Why doesn't he change? This fellow will not change at all. One fellow, he saw a man on the street. Oh, George! Oh my God, George, look at you. You've changed so much. You put on weight. You lost all your hair and I can't recognize you. Look how you have changed. That man goes, what George? My name is not George. Your name changed also? Everything. The change is a wonderful thing, I tell you. But the world plays with us like that. Whatever we want it to change, it doesn't change. And whatever we don't want to change. We want to be sure, always look like we're 18 years old. That changes very fast, isn't it? And then we say, Swamiji, it feels like just yesterday. But all gone like that. So, all this change belong to the upadhi. That is what it is saying. All of these change belong to the upadhi. I am the sakshi who is seeing all of the change. That is how you know you are the same person from 18 until now. When I was 18 and now when I am now, whatever age, I am the same person. I don't say I am a different person, isn't it? I am the same person. So the parinam, or the change which is going on, is witnessed by me, the sakshi. And the limitations belong to this upadhi also. Paricheda. It belongs to the upadhi. And paritapehi. All the sorrows belong to the upadhi. In this case, the ego, the individual ego, ahankar. Part of the upadhi is called ahankar. So it belongs to ahankar. That's why in next verse you will see also. When the ahankar goes to sleep in the night, all tapa goes also. All tapa, I mean afflictions, they all go. Go to sleep. Sleep our sorrows away. People say that, na?
Sleep your sorrows away.
And I told yesterday, the only unfortunate thing about that is that you will wake up tomorrow. Because prakriti miyanti bhutani, prakriti will make you wake up. Then what you'll do? Sorrows will come back when the ahankar again awakens. But I am the sakshi of all of them. I am not them. Just by, I told you, by sheer language and by truth also. The language we use is very good. Eh? The language is wonderful. That is why language is so important, you know, in all traditions, and especially in our tradition. That's why we say, we first do Shruti, the Shravanam. Shravanam is in language or not? Even if we listen to the language carefully and reflect on the language we are using, that will bring so much of benefit. Say, my sorrows, my limitations, my changes, they're called as my, they belong to me, they're not me. My limitations. See? Just listen to the language itself and reflect a little bit. So, none of them belong to me. I don't have any association, any relationship, any connection with all of them. I am just the witness only. Pure Sakshi. Alright. Now, we have two more classes only and many verses to finish. Three more classes. Huh? Oh, we'll it is within sight. It sounds feasible. We will see then at 10 o'clock. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha. Hari Om.